Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the March 27th, 2025 committee meeting of the House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee. A quorum is present, and our first order of action today is to approve the minutes from our previous meeting yesterday, March 26, 2025. And Representative Cha, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
I have, Chair, and I approve them. Thank you.
Representative Cha moves the approval of the minutes of the committee from March 26, 2025. Discussion, questions? Hearing none, seeing none. All those in favor of adoption of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. First bill, Tuesday and Thursday were Representative Hewitt days. Look at this. Representative Hewitt, you have the first bill on the docket this morning. House File 2601. And as Representative Hewitt is making his way to the testifying table, I will move House File 2601 before the committee, and we'll kind of see what happens. There's an amendment here, and depending upon what happens with the amendment, we may move this or we may lay it over. We'll just kind of have to see what happens with the amendment. So with that, Representative Hewitt, I move the bill before the committee. Did you want to talk about the A1 amendment first, get it in the order that you want, or maybe that's not your amendment, or?
It is my amendment. Well, Mr. Chair and co-chair, I'm excited to do another agency bill. Thank you for entrusting me in this. It seems like when people see me up here, I'm doing an agency bill. So, but yes, we'd like to move the A1 if we could.
Okay.
And it basically what it does is it narrows the scope.
Okay.
A little bit.
I can provide an explanation.
Okay, when we get to that, but okay. Yeah, we'd like to move it.
So we will move the A1 amendment at the author's request to get the bill in the form that the author would like. So Representative Hewitt moves the A1 amendment to House File 2601. Questions? If not, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Hewitt, the bill is now in the form that you would like. Take it away, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing the bill today. This is a simple bill brought by Commerce that they want to clean up some of the verbiage around contract for deeds. If you've ever used a contract for deed, these were real big in the 70s and early 80s to buy property, and the person carries a note. Some people today, they're starting to pop up again. I've seen them in a few of my sales. So I would like to turn it over to the department so we can expedite this a little bit.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Mr. Smith, welcome. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Herr, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm here to testify on this bill on behalf of the Department of Commerce. This policy bill contains three provisions. The first is around a defunct mortgage maximum interest rate. Every month, the department publishes the maximum interest rate that lenders can charge for certain types of second lien mortgage products. Fannie Mae's index rate, known as the required net yield, is the benchmark index used to calculate these maximum interest rates. On June 3rd, 2024, Fannie Mae stopped posting the RNY, and as of August 1st, 2024, the maximum interest rates under this section became impossible for the department to calculate. To respond to this, we are replacing it with a different, widely used maximum interest rate that is used by many other states. Absent this, we are again unable to calculate these numbers. The second piece is a technical change clarifying that it's subdivision 47.20, subdivision 4A, that governs the maximum interest rate charged for conventional loans. And the third provision is NAIC model law. This is being amended under this bill due to, through no fault of anybody, but significant delays with jacketing at the revisor's office. But Commerce is recommending the adoption of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Group Capital Calculation and Liquidity Stress Testing Requirements. From the packet that we included, you can see that most states have adopted these standards, and they provide additional metrics and transparency for the Department of Commerce to assess run-on-the-bank risk and solvency conditions for Minnesota companies. As a reminder, the NAIC, or the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, is it's a organization that is made up of regulators across the state looking to ensure that there is regulatory consistency for insurance companies across the country. The changes must be adopted by January 1st, 2026 for Minnesota to meet NAIC accreditation standards. Almost all other states have already adopted these changes to their insurance regulations. Adding them to Minnesota statutes would ensure that we maintain strong insurance solvency requirements on par with other jurisdictions. This language has been vetted widely by both regulators and industry at the national level and has been shared with key industry partners here in Minnesota, and we have heard no concerns of any kind with the bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Anyone from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 2601, as amended? Any members of the public? Seeing none, member questions for Mr. Smith or the bill author, Representative Hewitt. Representative Dotseff.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, Representative, or maybe the testifier might be able to clarify. On the interest rate paragraph, what is the maximum interest rate that investor can actually charge for the interest?
Mr. Smith.
So this, are you talking about the change in section one?
Correct.
This is a... Yeah, I think it's based on a scale. And Chair O'Driscoll, Representative Dotson said it's based on a scale, and this won't have any kind of, I think we'll have a substantive change on how folks are buying loan products, but it's just allowing us to continue to calculate that scale.
Mr. Chair, it's also it's basically like any other mortgage that we see them all the time in real estate. They're based on a scale out of stock gains or something. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for record, I just want to make sure that it's not going to take away the potential of, I guess I found that the contract for deed sometimes allows an opportunity for, more high-risk buyers to potentially buy a home, so that way it opens up the opportunity for home ownership. So this will not restrict that opportunity, correct?
Representative Hood or Mr. Smith, who wants to take that question?
Chair, Representative Dotseth, we are not anticipating any substantive changes to how folks are able to obtain loan products based on this change.
Mr. Chair, this is nothing but a protection for those people, so we don't have predatory lending here. And so it's a really good tool. I looked it over, and I think it's really a good way to help people that maybe have some challenges or income challenges. So, and again, as Chair Driscoll knows, we do use this tool in real estate. So.
Thank you.
Other member questions? I do have just... I always get just a little bit nervous when the amendment is bigger than the bill itself. And as I look in the amendment, if you go to page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, 11, there's a lot of new underlying language in there. Just wondering, Mr. Smith did a great job of talking about why we need it and our membership in the National Association. Could you maybe talk a little bit more, and it can be at a high level, of what it is that the bill is attempting to do or the amendment, particularly in some of those areas where there's a lot of proposed language to be added to statute, just for the comfort of the committee, if you would, sir. Thank you.
Chair O'Driscoll, thank you for the question. So the overarching focus of this language is to ensure that we can better track the standards by which we're determining that the holding companies that are kind of gathering together a lot of individual insurance products are financially solvent and are able to do the work that they claim to do to pay out claims and things like that. And so the NAIC has thoroughly vetted the changes anticipated here, and we want to make sure that every holding company, regardless of what state they're domiciled in or the products they're offering, are having to follow the same standards and expectations around how we're determining that they are financially sound and solvent. And so that's the intent and purpose of this.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Members, other questions? Representative Van Binsbergen.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. So there is a maximum rate that can be charged. So if I have a house and I'm selling it to somebody, they come into my office, and it's a $200,000 house. I'm going to do a contract for deed for 10 years. I'm going to lock it in for 5 and balloon it at 5. Do I have the right to charge whatever rate I want?
Mr. Smith.
Chair O'Driscoll, Representative Van Bitsberg. No, there is a maximum interest rate, and under the setup right here, that interest rate is a prime offer rate plus 4.5 points.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative Hewitt had suggested earlier, he said, you know, and he was looking at me because we do have some background on this, just to provide additional clarity, but maybe around the Dotseth question and as well as the Van Binsbergen question. Minnesota has traditionally had what's called a usury law, and in that usury law, it sets a maximum that can be charged for any kind of consumer-based loan, like an auto loan or unsecured loan or credit cards and different things, and that's why you see if you ever get a credit card application in the mayor or looking online, it says if you're in this state, here's the maximum interest rate and so forth, and that has to do with usury and these different pegs that we're talking about, and the peg that the state of Minnesota was using is no longer valid or relevant. It kind of went away, and so what the department's doing is it's recommending using another peg, and as rates go up and down in the marketplace, so will this maximum rate go up and down. So it's pegged at prime plus something. So if prime is 6%, and it can be prime plus 1.5, the maximum rate one could charge, in my example, would be 7.5%. And that's not uncommon for the protection of consumers. There's also IRS regulations on some of that, but that is outside of our purview as the state and of this committee. That's tax. Representative Van Binsbergen, did that help with your question?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We've addressed the one last follow-up. We've
Certainly.
Addressed the pieces of property above $100,000 with this, right? How about things that are below $100,000?
Mr. Smith.
Chair O'Driscoll, Representative Dotseth. Van Binsbergen. Thank you for the question. I don't know the interaction for a property under $100,000. What I can say is the Minnesota Mortgage Association has vetted this proposal and they support it.
Representative Binsbergen, the answer to that question from my experience in the industry is that under Minnesota usury, there's exceptions, and one of those exceptions is corporations. They're exempt from this. Think about it consumer to consumer versus consumer to business or business to business. Whenever it's a business to business, the rules are different because they're both considered to be entities that have resources that can negotiate. When it's entity to consumer, the consumer is at a disadvantage, and so that's where the loans that are less than $100,000, the additional protection applies. And that has been in statute probably for over 40 years as where that number is. So anything over that, you're considered to be more of a savvy individual under a 40-year-old law that exists in the state of Minnesota under usury.
Thank you, sir.
All right. With this amendment, I'm just going to ask staff if this needs to go, or maybe Mr. Smith knows, will this need to be re-referred to another committee, like judiciary, because of anything that's in here, or and I mentioned the tax committee. I don't know that there's any tax provision specifically in here. You didn't mention it. I just want to make sure that I understand that this needs to move rather quickly, and so I want to make sure that we don't have any issues where we'd have to refer and re-refer this. Does anyone know if this needs to go to judiciary? Mr. Smith?
Chair O'Driscoll, well, we're still determining whether or not a hearing in judiciary is necessary, but I think for the purposes of today, it makes the most sense to move it. There is some boilerplate language in the NASA model law around confidential data.
Correct.
This is not a substantive change and mirrors existing protections in state law, but I think to be safe, it makes sense to refer to judiciary at this time.
So if you want it referred to judiciary, or you want it to go to the general register, and then if it needs to go to judiciary, you want it to go to there. Because there's going to be time constraints with when we meet and can move paperwork and can re-refer things. So I want to make sure that we're doing this in the right direction to expedite the department's request.
Chair Driscoll, thank you. Our preference is to refer to judiciary.
Okay. Representative Hewitt, I will then amend the motion. I brought it before us because we didn't know if we were going to lay it over what the ultimate path was going to be. So if you're okay with that, Representative Hewitt, referring it to judiciary, I will make the motion then that House File 2601 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee of Judiciary and Civil Law.
Mr. Chair, I am fully supportive.
Yep. All right. Co-Chair Herr, you okay with that as well, Simon? Okay. All right. Then with that, all those in favor of the motion to re-refer to judiciary and civil law signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. All right, very good. Our next bill is also a Representative Schuett bill, and that bill is in your packets, members, and that is House File 2607. And this bill is a Hewitt and Perryman bill, and there is an amendment to the bill. I think this is also an author's amendment. And so I will move House File 2607 before the committee. And I believe this can go right to the General Register, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Chair, that would be great.
Yep. So so that is my motion that we would recommend refer to the General Register. And then we'll take the amendment, and then we'll, if the amendment goes on, we will modify the motion at that point. And again, is that all right with you, Co-Chair Herr? Okay. Representative Hewitt to House File 2607 and your amendment.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Co-Chair, this is really an interesting bill. When I received it, it was sent over from Senator Seeberger, and when we were talking about it as a group the other day, we found out that why would we need a bill like this? If somebody were to ask for their policy, they should get it. And I think this is where we're having a lot of other players come into the state that aren't normally here, like internet providers and stuff of insurance. And this actually happened to a senator. So basically, that's where the bill came from. The amendment itself, I'm going to have my testifier go into the amendment. But this is the other thing, is the testifier today is from the insurance industry. So that's even more profound. So,
it is my understanding, if I am interpreting this right, you do want to move the A1 amendment to
I'm
get
sorry,
it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I do.
Okay. Yep. Representative Hewitt moves the A1 amendment to House File 2607. Discussion by members on the A1 amendment. Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author wishes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. And with that, Mr. Cocking, if you'll introduce yourself for the committee and speak to the House File 2607 as amended. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, Chair Herr, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Cocking, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. As Representative Hewitt said, this bill came about as a result of an unfortunate incident with a member of the other body, and she had brought it forth to me and asked, why would this be the case? Why somebody who wanted a copy of their insurance policy to review what their coverages may or may not be could not get one. Her insurer told her that it was confidential, and she wasn't able to get it, even though she would be a party to the contract. And so when she brought it forward, we said, yeah, this makes common sense. People should be able to review their coverages and look at it. The A1 amendment is simple. It merely narrows the scope down to, in essence, personal line products, auto and home, and doesn't pick up group policies and some life stuff. There were a host of issues that were kind of brought up as a result of that. And so we're here with this, and I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cocking, is there an opt-out? I don't want my policy every 6 months. They stack up like that, and you can get a deck sheet. They send you a deck sheet. I don't want a policy every 6 months or every year. Is there an opt-out?
Mr. Cocking, can you help Chair Davids with his issue?
Because, Mr. Chair, I'm a true environmentalist. I don't want to waste all that paper.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, this bill is set up, you have to request a copy of it to get it, and that was the issue. It's not sent out by default. It says if you request it within 21 days, and the insurer can deliver it either paper, via email, or other online website links. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Binsbergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it seems like kind of a strange bill. Is this happen that people, you call your insurance agent or you call your the company and you want information on your policy? I mean, if it was me and I called my agent and he wouldn't give me the information I wanted, I'd go down the road and find a different agent.
Give me a new agent.
So I just kind of question the need for this.
Mr. Cocking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Van Binsbergen, two things I would say. Number one, most people outside of kind of those of us that would consider ourselves insurance nerds are not looking at their policy. For the most part, people don't read through them, which, you know, I think is a challenge in itself. I think people should know what they have. So there's not a lot of this coming in. But number two, you're right. When we put this out and said to our membership and said, does anybody have objections to this? The questions that came back were, who is already not providing this? I mean, to a person, every one of them said if somebody reached out to us and wanted a copy of their policy, they're entitled to it. So this is, I think, for the what was highlighted as, I don't know if you want to call him a bad actor, but somebody who's, yeah, clearly not in the mainstream of what the rest of the industry was doing.
Representative Binsbergen, follow-up? You don't have to have that, one.
No, I just don't understand the need for this. Thank you.
It's an inquiry, not an invitation. Representative Cahiz-Watun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that you started off kind of in your explanation that this happened recently to a senator here in Minnesota. So it is happening, albeit very rarely, but in the case that it does, we want to make sure that people have access to these policies, and so it seems like a good move.
Mr. Cocking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cahiz-Watun, I think that's exactly right. You know, people should know and people should be able to get their policies. It's in the best interest for people to know, especially in kind of the midst of where we're at with the insurance market, what coverages people have. So,
follow up, Representative Cahiz-Watun. Okay. Co-chair her.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment too on Representative Cahiz-Watun's point is that this does happen. And I know that, you know, we've joked a little bit, and I'm glad that we get to have fun here in this committee, and this is not pointed at anybody in particular. But when people do experience something and they're a consumer and they do want to know what they have, they should have the opportunity to do that. And that I think that a lot of times people assume that you shouldn't, that you won't read it, and so then they create their own policies in which prevent you from actually getting access to the things that you are entitled to. And so I do think that I appreciate that this has been brought forward, and had this not happened, maybe, you know, and to somebody who actually has a lot of power and privilege, that maybe everyday people who are still asking are not getting in. And I think it is important to remember that people should have access to their own information. So I appreciate you bringing this forward, Representative Hewitt.
Mr. Cocking.
Chair O'Driscoll, Chair Herr, I think that's spot on. It's interesting to note that the resolution for her to get to the point where she got her policy was that she had to file a complaint with the Department of Commerce to be able to get this to happen, which should have, I mean, obviously should never have to escalate to that point. And so I think that highlighted also she was able to get it, but that nobody should have to go through that to be able to get a copy of their policy.
Co-Chair Herr, follow-up? Representative Khrushchev.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Mr. Cocking, just a quick clarification. I think I heard you use the word bad actor in there, and I just want to make sure as we walk out of here, I think what I'm hearing is this is not the industry standard. This is not what most insurance practitioners are doing. This is a bad actor that we're going to correct, and I just wanted to let you clarify that.
Mr. Cocking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khrushchev, that's correct, and I think you could even make the argument that some of this wasn't necessarily even company policy. I think sometimes it gets caught up with people that, you know, in some of these large companies that maybe don't know or that go out and to do this, and this just clarifies without any question that you're entitled to a copy of your policy.
Other member questions? Mr. Cocking, just following up on your comment, we know that people start their jobs and sometimes it's a little difficult to know everything that's going on and kind of get caught up in the moments on some different things, and that could have been an oversight and an error, and it could have well been the company policy. It is not this committee's intention to impugn any company with the comments and statements that were made today. I think I can safely say that on behalf of all members. And Mr. Cocking, in the insurance industry, if I were to go to a company and I were to buy an auto policy, I would actually receive a copy of that auto policy at the purchase, would I not?
You would. Mr. Chair, you would.
Then, Mr. Cocking, would I also receive updates in my regular billings upon renewals and stuff if coverages have changed and things that I would then be able to add to my policy? And as Representative David said, every time that limits change or things change and there's a renewal, there's a deck sheet, which is a kind of a summary of your benefits and things that are on the front page. Anybody who wants to know more about that, we may hold some classes after session about that. Mr. Cocking.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Unfortunately, most people, when their insurance renewal comes, pulls out their billing slip and their deck sheet and throw the rest of it away. And that's been a challenge, you know, as we've added disclosures on you know, insurers for years to get people to better understand. We print them off, they go in the envelope, and nobody looks at them. And that is a challenge, too, because, you know, people know when they're shopping what they want their insurance, and when it comes claims time, and in between, out of mind for the most part.
And Mr. Cocking, I would, without question, agree that most people are focused on the statement that's in there and the price tag on that much more than they are of the coverage that they have. They really need to be focusing on both because they purchased that coverage to make sure that they're properly insured. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when you write an auto policy, you can get the policy right away, or sometimes some companies, you get a binder, and then within a week, you'll have a policy in the mail. So it can work either way.
Correct, and that referring to another bill that we had with the Hewitt Bill of Financing, that's what you have to do is you have to bring a binder in, and you may not get the physical policy, but the insurance company says you're covered, and that follows up all this hard copy paperwork that we're talking about. So once again, we're well on our way to getting a Minnesota insurance license in this committee at this point. Seeing no other member questions, Representative Hewitt, we will give you the final word, sir.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll and Co-Chair Herr, for the great discussion here. We as legislators have done this through the decades of cleaning up bad actors. If you had the experience of having a purchase agreement in front of you, and I'm going to bring out the educator and Chair O'Driscoll here, it's about 4 pages long, and every line on there is because of a bad actor. And that's what we do as legislators to make sure our job is to protect the people. And so I appreciate the committee for hearing this, and thank you, Chair O'Driscoll.
Representative Hewitt, we will renew the motion that House File 2607, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. Members, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. And our final bill on the agenda today is the House Commerce, Finance, and Policy Committee Omnibus Liquor Bill. I will be the chief author this year of that bill, and as I make my way to the testifying table, Representative Perryman will step in as the chair. So right back after this commercial announcement. Representative Stevenson, is there a commercial for Anoka while we're making this move?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Hans Bakery has wonderful donuts, so since this is the morning, I would recommend that you go to Hans Bakery. There's also a Swedish bakery in Anoka on the other end of town, so if you're coming from the north, I would go to the Swedish bakery. If you're coming from the south, I would go to Hans Bakery. And with that, you can return to your regular programming, Mr. Chair.
Oh, on that note, well, welcome to the table, Chair O'Driscoll. Would you like to move HF 2027 before the committee to be placed on the General Register?
Madam Chair, that is my intention to move House File 2027 and ask it to be before the committee and to be referred to the General Register.
Chair O'Driscoll, you have a DE2 amendment which reflects the agreed to House position for the liquor bill. Would you please explain the amendment?
I will, Madam Chair. And there actually was a method to my madness of asking Representative Stevenson to talk about Anoka. You will recall the day that we had, we're discussing liquor. We did have a day dedicated to learning more about social districts and how it's working in Anoka in front of this committee. And again, I want to underscore that this committee did a great job of discovery and asking questions and good questions. And I think that Anoka actually appreciated hearing from this committee what their concerns were and the pluses and the minuses as we contemplate getting the report back from them in August, as well as taking this matter up next year to figure out what do social districts need to look like in the state of Minnesota. And the reason that I bring that up is we have heard no bills on social districts because we want to do our job and do our due diligence on that. And so, again, I thank Representative Stevenson for arranging for Anoka to be present. In the DE2 amendment, we have incorporated a large number of the bills that were practicable to be able to get resolved and find solutions for this year. Some didn't need any, some needed a few, some we were just not ready to be able to include. So members of the committee, there are going to be 13 different provisions in the DE amendment. And they're not necessarily in the same order maybe that I'm going to be talking about them, but we first have the request that came from members of the House that talked about the St. Paul Science Museum Museum and the Union Depot, being able to have a license to be able to, are granted permission to be able to apply for a license to be able to have events that could serve liquor there. There were two provisions that are in the bill for the University of Minnesota licensing. They're as separate entries. They both came from the same author, but because of the nature of those, they were split out into two different items in the language of the DE amendment. We had a provision of talking about a food truck being able to serve alcohol at private events. We did offer an amendment to that to clarify that it would be private events only, because there were concerns by members of the committee about whether or not this would be, what would be the parameters, what would be the managing of the sale and distribution of alcohol. So it's for private events only, for example, a wedding or something of that nature. Another provision in the bill is a provision that allows those age 17 to be able to serve alcohol in places that have liquor licenses. We put some language around that as well that reemphasizes that that 17-year-old is not their own boss, that they have to report to someone who is going to supervise them while they are on duty engaged in those activities. We have another provision from a member that's been like the minor provision liquor that I just mentioned, wine shipments. We've removed some of the language in that bill, and we're looking to move the cases from 2 to 4 per year, nothing else changing on that. We have the Minneapolis Food Hall request in the bill. We also have the St. Louis Park Food Hall on the west end included, and you'll recall we had the same operator who was here with two different legislators talking about the same type of request for two different locations. There is also the Mankato request, and there is some language in the bill that clarifies really where that liquor license can be. The arena is off campus. It's a campus that's requesting it. It's not a chain from the distance between the campus to the arena. It is the arena that would have that ability to apply for a license. We also have a provision from another member in the House that is dealing with the Dwan Golf Course in Bloomington and their liquor license request. And we have a Lake of the Woods, which was approved previously, but there were some filing issues where the community did not step forward and get that taken care of. We're renewing that. There is also a provision from another one of our members on this committee for the Rochester Chateau Theater that is included. And finally, there is a provision in here for the Springfield Community Center. So there are 13 provisions that are in the House bill, and that is the DE amendment. And so, Madam Chair, to that end, we will take a look at the DE if members have questions or if there's questions from the public today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Members, we really do not have any amendments to the DE2, so we will move to testimony, and I will open it up to the public who wishes to testify to the DE2 amendment to HF2027. Do we have any public testifiers? Any public that would like to give their testify to DE2? Seeing none, we will move right to the members for members' questions. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. I just have one question that just keeps coming up, and actually constituents ask about it, and it's with your bill, the 17 server. I don't know if that's what we're calling it, but has the insurance companies contacted you? And if the insurance company chooses not to insure the institution, is that going to be a problem? I'm kind of caught on this one.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, I'm going to answer that in three parts, Representative Hewitt. As you know from previous testimony, we have folks in the insurance industry who are here who are still present, and we just had comment period, and they didn't come forward on it. And Mr. Cocking would have been someone who would have had carriers that would have written coverage in that area. Number two, in Minnesota law, in order for someone to serve alcohol or sell alcohol, they have to go through training, and that does not exempt 17-year-olds from the required training or the compliance checks that are periodically done by local jurisdictions to make sure that liquor is properly being managed. What it does, it just brings another group of people under the same umbrella on that. If you want further clarification or comfort, other than my word, Mr. Cocking is here, and I'm happy to have him come forward if he's willing to discuss that with you if you have some questions.
No, Mr. Chair, I just spent too much time with him, so.
On that Chair, note, Representative quickly, Hewitt, I think is done.
Please.
Any other members' discussion? Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just one minor question. It's line 3.24. It's in the food truck section.
Could you cite that for me again, please?
3.24. Yep. We changed it to be just the private events, and it's consistent throughout, except on this line, it also says prior to any community festival or event or any private catered event. And I'm concerned that that might cause confusion for people who are reading the bill or trying to apply the bill later. Thank you.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Representative Ryer, you bring up a very good question. This is language that we were working with staff based on the feedback that we got from the testimony that we had in working with nonpartisan staff. I also understand and support the private venues, and if it's the wishes of the committee. What I will do, if we move this, I will get clarification. If we need to, I will be happy to be the first person to step up and offer clarifying language on the House floor when this bill comes up to take care of that or explain what happened on that provision, if you're okay with that, Representative Ryer.
Chair O'Driscoll and Representative, any further questions? Nope. We will turn to also then Lori Pompo for further clarification, please, our House research analysis.
Yeah, thank you, Chair and members. This looks to be something left over from an earlier edition of this amendment. So staff recommends an oral amendment to strike that reference.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Further?
If we can get it cleaned up today, all the better, because it's only going to get busier from here for all of us in the legislature. So if Ms. Pompeo needs a few minutes to kind of collect her thoughts with all of not all of us looking at her at the same time and putting extra pressure on her, that would be helpful.
Representative Ryer.
When you're ready, let us know, Ms. Pompeo.
Chair and members, I think I'm ready to go.
Okay.
The oral amendment will be on line 3.24. After the first two, we're going to delete any community festival or event, comma, or, and leave the rest of the language in.
Chair O'Driscoll, would you like to move that oral amendment?
So just to repeat, to make sure that I understand and everyone in the committee understands, line in the public, line 3.24D, the licensee shall notify prior to, then delete any community festival or event, comma, and the language stays as written, or any private catering event.
Chair and members, we're going to delete that extra or at the end, too. So in the end, it'll read, the licensee shall notify prior to any private catered event. So we'll have a single sentence going there.
I will move that oral amendment.
Chair O'Driscoll moves to the oral amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those please say no, nay. Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Ryer. I should have asked if you were okay with that before we voted on it, but I appreciate your help on that.
Right, Representative Ryer.
Madam Chair, thank you for being receptive. Appreciate it.
We certainly want to have the intent of what we're doing in statute.
We will next go to Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Perryman and Chair O'Driscoll.
I just wanted to say that I appreciate the work that you've done on this since we heard the proposals on Liquor Day. That day I kind of came out as a bit of a wet blanket, and I feel grateful that some of those concerns were referenced in the changes, even up to this very oral amendment. So, I'm grateful for the robust conversation and the changes as we move forward. I think it's important to be cautious about these changes, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you to both chairs and the committee.
Thank you. Any next member we have on the docket?
Madam Chair, if I might. Thank you, yes. Representative Finke. That has been a hallmark of this committee, is being able to work together and take the time to get things done right. And it's very refreshing to be able to do that. We don't always have committee time, and different committees don't have the hustle and bustle to do that. And I have come to learn over the years the bills you don't want to carry in the legislature are liquor bills and reinsurance bills, and the list goes on. But somebody has to do it, and so I appreciate your support and help on that, Representative Finke.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, for the bill. I know how difficult liquor bills can be just because of all the conversations around those. And I want to highlight the section on the wine transfer for the shipping, and glad to see that's in here on line 5.2. And I do want to just take a moment to say, and you mentioned it, it's difficult to carry liquor bills because there can be this air of controversy around that. And by seeing this section in here with transferring or moving the transfer from 2 to 4 on the shipping, it gives me great hope that this body is willing to talk about the transfer of alcohol and the different ways that can happen. And one of the things that I just want to put aside commercial, I want to tell you all this bill, I understand where you're at, appreciate it, and it's allowed a lot of that, what we can get done to go forward. But members, we have a bill, House File 901, it's a wine transfer bill that we've talked about for many, many members. I just want to highlight to you that is not as controversial, and it keeps staying out of these bills. And when Representative Stevenson carried the bill, he had a hearing as well. So my hope for this body and for this committee is that we consider that transferring wine is acceptable, and that it can be done, and it can be done safely, and that we shouldn't just listen to the outside naysayers who are saying this is controversial. So with that, appreciate your bill, and would hope that folks could work with this committee and the body further on expansion of that. So thank you for that.
Chair O'Driscoll, any comments?
Just appreciate hearing from members on concerns. This is the first half of a two-year biennium, and I believe that we will be seeing a liquor bill next year if we do move forward with social districts, so there'll be an opportunity for additional clarifications if it is the wishes of the committee.
Next is Representative Herr, and after Representative Herr is Representative Cha.
Madam Chair, if we could have Representative Cha go first, then I can go last.
Representative Cha.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Chair.
To the author,
yes,
Representative O'Driscoll, I had concerns about your 17-year-old liquor bill, but I really appreciate that we had the side conversation and the explanation, and I do agree with you that, you know, after the pandemic and before the pandemic happened, I was actually working at the country club, and we couldn't get enough servers to come in to service the restaurant. And obviously the membership was very upset about that. And I couldn't imagine, but for the duration of that time, we couldn't get employment into that service. So thanks for your explanation on that bill, and good luck, thank you.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Cha, thank you for teeing that up for me. I have found a very disturbing trend happening in the conversations of people who have been coming to my office, not just with these issues, and maybe you have as well, where just finding people post-pandemic is very difficult for employers right now, and where we're in a situation where it's like people were working and the pandemic came and they didn't have work, or they worked differently, like, hey, I can, you know, have a less stress in my life, I can have more peaceful, I'm retiring early, I'm doing things. And what I'm hearing from the folks, because we hit with insurance issues here, so the medical folks want to come in, they're like, we're hiring doctors, but we're having doctors who are saying, I only want to work 3 days a week. If they are backfilling for a doctor who's retiring, we're losing 40% of patient contact time for that doctor. That is extremely challenging. And so this is has been the genesis behind this in the hospitality industry, to be able to open that up and to build a little bit of a runway for folks to be able to develop a working relationship as an employer and employee, to give folks an opportunity to be able to raise some money and save for college or for other kinds of things while they're at a younger age. So I appreciate that, Representative Cha.
Representative Cha, any further?
No, thank you.
We'll go to Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say, publicly that Representative O'Driscoll has been a really great partner in putting this liquor omnibus together. We've worked really well together. And so I am going to actually ask for a 10-minute recess, and this is not a reflection of the work or any issue within this bill itself. There's just a small piece of process that I just need to check in with Representative O'Driscoll on. So if I could just ask for a 10-minute recess and then for us to reconvene after that, Madam Chair.
Chair O'Driscoll, do you have any comments to the recess?
Yeah, I'm open to a recess. If there are questions that we need to take offline with the co-chair and myself, happy to do that.
So,
Madam Chair, a recess for 10 minutes under the call of the chair. That's just an approximate time. I don't want to have be able to resolve and then have to sit for 7 minutes and wait for 10 minutes to pass, but it's anticipated that it will be less than 10 minutes, but to the call of the chair, if you're okay with that.
The committee is in recess for 10 minutes. Members, I call the Commerce, Finance, and Policy back to order and reconvene. Chair O'Driscoll.
Madam Chair, thank you, and members and those of the public for the recess. There were some technical questions, and the amendment that was circulated, we wanted to be transparent, will not be offered today. And we are ready, if there are no other member questions, to move to a vote.
Any other member questions? And we will go to the roll. All those in favor.
We need to, I want to offer Co-Chair Heard the opportunity
yes.
to speak to this as well before we do the adoption of the DE.
Thank you, Chair Perryman, and thank you, Co-Chair O'Driscoll. I really do, I want to just say for the record that, you know, you have been a fantastic partner in this and that we all worked really hard in trying to hear as many bills that came in the timeline that we had asked for people to. And you have worked really hard to incorporate the feedback that was given by our side as well into this. And so I just want to say I appreciate the work that you've put into this and your willingness to collaborate. And this is a good bill, and I would recommend all of our members to vote yes for the bill.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would underscore what Representative Herr said. She has been a great partner in this effort, and I appreciate the members' support. And so what I'd like to do, Madam Chair, is I'd like to move the DE2 amendment as amended with our change on line 3.24 to House File 2027 and to be referred to the General Register.
All those in favor of the DE2 amendment as amended, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amended is adopted as amended. Chair O'Driscoll, Chair O'Driscoll, please, your closing comments.
I think we've had, it's last call, let's just close down and head home.
And Mr. Chair.
Okay.
As amended.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
That's why we're recessing, is I needed to come up with a groaner for this.
That's a question. Representative Crescia has a comment, question.
For the record, Madam Chair, I think I heard you say the amendment as amended, and I think just to make sure the record stated, it's the bill as amended. So I just want to make sure you have that correct for the recording.
Yep.
Did we get the motion right?
We are taking the amendment first, and then we'll move to the final motion.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. With I'm sorry, Representative Katisa Batun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to appreciate the reference to a Minnesota band in that closing time comment, Mr. Chair. Semisonic.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, there were no appropriate Taylor Swift references available.
She seems to pop up several times. So with that said, the Chair renews Chair O'Driscoll's motion that HF 2027 as amended be placed on the General Registry. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no, nay. The motion prevails, and HF 2027, as amended, is placed on the general registry. Any more, especially from the two chairs, Chair Herr or Chair O'Driscoll, any further comments?
I will, Madam Chair, thank you. I will tell you that obviously it's Thursday. We have first and second deadlines by the end of next week, followed by the finance deadline and the third deadline the following week. Members, the two co-chairs and staff will be getting together to talk about a framework. Be prepared for markup of other bills. This is our first bill off the island in the way of an omnibus bill from this committee. And again, appreciate working with all of you.
Thank you. Seeing no...
Does co-chair have any comments?
Chair Herr, she said no. So... So seeing no further business from our committee, our next hearing is Tuesday, April 1st, April Fool's Day. I don't know what that'll mean for Chair O'Driscoll and Chair Herr, and we are adjourned.